Commander. She nodded, do it. Fish wormed his way into loose straw out of the way to wait. He had it all scoped out now. Chapter 65. Raven and Bowmans ragged my old tent mate Ken and each other. He sat in a chair, the only one we had, and didn't say nothing. He was totally pissed off, but in a way so stubborn I don't think they could have got a squeak out of him with a hot poker. He just looked at them like he figured on cutting their throats in about 1 minute. He even refused a meal. I didn't. I stood around stuffing food in my face and wondering what the hell was going on since nobody bothered explaining anything to me. Darlin stomped, got everybody's attention, signed, "Get the Soldier." Now what? Raven and Silent went climbing into the hayloft. In a minute they came back with a Night Stalker who was gagged and, from the way he chafed his wrists, had been tied. They brought him over. He glanced indifferently at Ken. Ken didn't react at all. Silent took the gag off. Raven asked, "Do you know the man in the chair?"
"Yeah,"
the Night Stalker croaked. He worked some spit back into his throat.
"Yeah, name's Ken something. He used to come around the place I was billeted sometimes, drink a few beers with us."
Silent and Raven looked at each other and had a frowning contest. Raven asked, "You sure his name isn't Smedstall?"
"Nah."
Silent corked him one upside the head and knocked him down. Raven asked, "You sure?" "This man here and the woman over there were at Queen's Bridge. They still have grudges." The Night Stalker looked up at him and said,
"Man, I'll call him Tommy Tucker, King Thrushbeard, or Smedstall if that's going to make you happy, but that ain't going to turn him into Smedstall."
"He fits the description." The Soldier looked at Ken.
"Maybe. A little. But Smedstall has got to be at least 10 years older than this guy."
Raven said, "Shit. I don't think I ever heard him use the word before." It was not the right time, but I couldn't help it. There he was, headed into the last turn in the inside lane, leading by neck as we headed toward the stretch, and the damned horse pulled up lame. They appreciated it. For a second, I thought Silent might actually say something. Probably something I didn't want to hear. Darlin stomped, asked what was going on. She read lips some, but could not keep up with all that. Raven and Silent signed like hell. She made a gesture she hadn't taught me, probably cussing, then told them to put the Night Stalker back in the loft. Raven and Silent dragged him off like it was his fault things didn't work out the way they wanted. Darlin signed to anybody who would pay attention that it was all her fault for jumping to conclusions about some guy she saw on a porch one day. I didn't know what the hell she was going on about. When Silent and Raven came back, we had us a big woe-is-me session. Bowman's buzzard pal Dan Tenier got strangled by everybody. A banging up in the loft broke that up. Everybody went charging up to see what the racket was. The loft doors, where they hoisted the hay bales up and brought them inside, were banging in the wind. The Night Stalker and Brigadier Wildbrand, that they hadn't told me about before, were gone. Silent and Raven looked at the discarded ropes and gags and got into it over whose fault it was the Night Stalker didn't get tied up tight enough. I dropped back down and told Darlin. She had me yell at them to knock off the crap and get out there and catch them. They came, still bickering. She started giving orders aimed at stopping the Night Stalkers before they could get back to their own. "Paddlefoot stays here. He is in no shape." The torque was crapped out in one of the horse stalls and had been since I'd come in. "Case, you stay and keep track of our guest." That went over big. Raven and Silent gave me their famous deadly looks, like maybe I'd arranged the whole damn thing just so I could get her alone. Hell, After 3 days in that camp, I didn't feel like doing anything anyway. We were in a spot. From what Darlin signed, I gathered we was out of places to run. We couldn't even go back to the temple because Wildbrand and the corporal probably heard them talk about how we hid out right in Exile's pocket. Even that buzzard got out to do some aerial scouting. I was glad. He hadn't started enemy yet, but I was up to my ears with him nagging Bowmans. The old boy was all right. I never saw Darlin rattled before. She paced and stomped and made incomplete gestures and signed at me without ever finishing a thought. She wasn't afraid, just worried about what would become of the rest of us and the movement if the guys didn't catch the Night Stalkers in time. I don't know what I thought we might get up to, but at the time it seemed a good idea to tie old Ken up. Then I stood behind his chair conversing with Darlin like I suddenly needed something to hide behind. I don't know how much later it was, probably only a couple minutes, when I saw somebody move behind Darlin and thought it was Paddlefoot Torque finally waking up. I went to work on me for being too damned chicken shit to having grabbed an opportunity when it was there. That wasn't Torque. That was somebody else. The second I realized that, before I could give her any warning, the guide laid a knife across her throat. "Turn him loose," he told me. And when I just stood there gawking, he drew a little blood. "Do it." I started fumbling with knots. Torque did decide to wake up then. I don't think the poor silly sack ever knew what was going on. He stumbled out, rubbing his eyes and mumbling. The guy holding Darlin turned around and stuck him with a knife he had in his left hand. Came back and got Darlin in the side with the same knife as she was turning toward him, and in almost the same motion threw the knife with which he had threatened her. It hit me in the hip. I felt it go deep and hit bone. Then the grungy stable floor opened its arms and jumped up to meet me. The guy yanked his knife out of Darlin and bounced over to cut our guest loose. Then he got set to cut my throat. "Hey!" our guest yelled. "Knock it off! They weren't going to croak me!" "This is the second time they've shoved their faces in our business. They want to clean us out. I warned them last time." "Let's just find my pack and get the hell out before the rest of them come back." I could have kissed him, if I could have done anything at all. I wasn't too spry right then. The other one looked down at me. "You tell the bitch this was her last free chance. Next time..." He flashed his bloody knife past his throat. Then Ken found the pack I'd found in the alley. He put it on and they went away. When the stable door closed behind them, I ground my teeth and yanked the damned knife out of me. I didn't bleed to death on the spot, so I knew it didn't get any big veins. I crawled over to Darlin. She was pale and she was hurting, but she wanted me to check on Torque first. He was still alive, but I didn't think there was a whole lot that could be done to keep him that way. I told Darlin. She signed we had to do something. Of course we did. But I didn't know the hell what. Raven busted in.
"We caught them! We're safer! What the hell happened, Case?"
By then they were all inside, recaptured prisoners included. I told it. While I was, one of our little spies came in from the temple to report that Exile had ordered an all-out search for Brigadier Wildbrand and persons unknown masquerading as his guards. Bowmans and Silent did what they could for us casualties. Then everybody that could hit the street again. It was starting to snow out there. "Some fun, eh?" I asked the Night Stalkers. They didn't see the humor. Frankly, neither did I. Chapter 66.
What the shit are we going to do?
Smeds growled at Fish when they stopped running to catch their breaths.
There ain't no safe places left.
Fish said,
I don't know. I used up all my ideas just getting you out.
They know our names, Fish. And that bunch knows our faces.
You're the one who wouldn't let me take them out. You end up paying for that. Don't whine at me.
There's been enough killing and hurting. All I want is out.
He tried to get his pack settled more comfortably.
I don't even give a damn about selling the spike anymore. I just want to wake up from the nightmare.
Snowflakes had begun to swirl around them. Fish grumbled about leaving tracks, then asked, You know of anywhere to lay up even for a little while?
12 hours would do. 24 would be better.
The limper would be here, and there wouldn't be any more ducking and slinking because the soldiers would be busy. The only thing Smeds could think of was a drainage system that had been built when he was a kid to carry water away from the neighborhood when it rained. Before the system, there'd always been little local floods when it stormed. Some of the ditching was covered over. They had played and hidden out in there. But he hadn't paid any attention in 10 years. Public works, which did not serve the rich and powerful, had a way of dying of neglect. It was no place he wanted to spend any time. It would be cold and damp and infested with rats and, these days, probably human vermin. But he could think of nowhere else to get out of sight, even for an hour.
When I was a kid, we used to...
Don't tell me. If I don't know, I can't tell anybody. Just tell me where's a good place for you to see me without me or anybody watching me seeing you.
Smets thought about it and mentioned a place he did know was there because his labor battalion had passed that way every morning and evening when he was doing time. He described it, asked,
What are we up to?
I'm going to see if Exile will talk deal.
Oh, shit, man. He'll take you apart.
He might, Fish admitted. But we know somebody's going to do that real soon anyway. He's the only one who's offered any serious deal.
I think if I had my druthers, I'd rather the rebels got the damned thing. The Imperials are nasty enough without it.
Fish grunted.
Maybe. But they don't want to pay for it. They want you to do it for love. I'm a whore, too old and set in her ways not to want to get paid for my trouble.
Smed said,
I guess for guys like us, it don't matter who's running things anyway. Whoever it is, they're going to try to stick it to us.
The heavens had cut loose now, dumping snow so heavily it had become their ally. Fish started explaining what he wanted Smets to do. Chapter 67 The gang came smashing in out of the blizzard. Raven snarled,
We lost them!
Stubby Torque said,
You can't see your hand in front of your face out there.
You tracked Raker down in a snowstorm in Roses, didn't you? I asked Raven.
Different circumstances.
He was double-pissed now because of what he thought he saw when he busted through the door. As if we could have done anything about it carved up the way we were. Darling shut them up. She made it clear she'd had her mind on business because she told them what we were going to do if those guys told the Gray Boys where to find us again. She felt almost sorry for those two. She overdid the empathy sometimes. I don't have any for guys who stick knives in me. The excitement started a few hours later when a couple of our little spies from the temple came charging in to tell us how a guy who sounded like the one who stabbed me had dropped in on Exile to see if he could cut a deal.
As a good faith gesture, he'd told Exile where he could find us and Brigadier Wildbrand. He'd also told Exile his headquarters were so riddled with spies he couldn't sneeze without some plane creature reporting it. That meant big excitement over there. A bunch of our little allies didn't get the word in time to get out. Gossamer and Spider Silk led the exterminator squads. Meantime, they were throwing together a gang to come after us. They figured we'd hear they were coming, but counted on us getting caught being on the move in a city alert for us. I thought they were a little optimistic there, considering Bowman's and Silent had done a good job keeping us from being noticed before. But Exile probably wouldn't know we had those kinds of resources. Not about Bowman's, at least. I figured his big panic would come when he started wondering what resources Darlin could call up out of the plane. She did have something cooked up with the tree god. What I didn't know, it wouldn't be anything small. Nothing like being nailed down on the bullseye of history in the making without a fool's notion of what was going on. Nothing personal, Case, old buddy, but they can't make you tell what you don't know. Darlin told Silent and the Torques to get the horses out so they could not be recaptured. They were going to hide them on an empty lot nearby. Yeah? What would they do about tracks? Something wizardly, I guess. Horses were part of her plans, whatever they were. I had caught part of an argument with Silent where she told him she wanted to steal a bunch more. One heroic little rock monkey hung in the temple till the last moment, near getting himself fried by the twins so he could find out as much as possible about Exile's deal for the spike. There was a deal. The monkey said Exile was going to play it straight and keep his end of the bargain if the guys with the spike kept theirs. The monkey said the guy dealing for them had no idea where the spike was, nor any idea where the guy who did know was hiding. Made sense to me. And to Exile, I guess. He didn't waste no time jacking the guy around. Just asked the go-between how they wanted to make the exchange. We'd had the guy who knew. I'd lived in the same damned tent with him for days. I wanted to kick some night stalkers around for lying to us. Raven got the wind-up, too. How the hell are we supposed to con people into fighting the Empire if the bastards go honest on us? Who ever heard of a wizard dealing straight? Bowman's gave him some dirty looks, but never got no chance to argue because right then we got word that Exile's boys were closing in. When they busted in, all they saw was Brigadier Wildbrand and her buddy sitting on the floor by our runt men here. The rest of us were still there, but Bowman's had disguised us as heaps of manure and whatnot while we gave the Night Stalkers the idea we were sneaking out. The talking stone boomed out.
"Hi, guys. You're too late again. You're always going to be too late. Why don't you wake up and come on over to the winning side? The White Rose don't hold no grudges."
The raiders were all Exile's personal guards. Unlikely recruits, but the stone kept nagging them. They spread out. Some rushed into the loft where nobody was hiding. Some went to work to get the Night Stalkers loose. And some went to work trying to figure how to silence that big-mouth stone. The men here vanished. And just when their eyes stopped popping, here it came back.
"You boys better get your hearts and heads right fast. It's almost dawn now, and before sunset tomorrow, the White Rose is going to cure this berg of the Imperial disease."
Away it went again. That crack rattled them some. Here it came, spewing more mockery. They got so pissed they stopped doing a thorough job of searching.
There was some noise outside. Three of them charged out into the blizzard. There was a flash, a scream, a guy staggered inside.
They're all dead out there! They took the horses!
That damned Silent was showing off for Darlin. She would be pissed at him for wasting them when he didn't have to. I didn't blame him, though. He'd been keeping a lot bottled up. These guys were some he could make pay. A bunch more went charging off to avenge their buddies. The Talking Stone whooped and laughed and carried on. They never caught Silent, of course. But he got some more of them. They finally took Brigadier Wildbrand and got out of there while there were some of them left to get. A little later, Silent brought 10 horses in. Him and the Torques were real pleased with themselves. I think maybe Darlin was the only one who wasn't pleased with them. Chapter 68. The snowfall had ended. The sky had cleared. The world had grown almost intolerably bright by the time the limper topped the rise that gave him his first glimpse of his destination. The silence troubled him some. There should have been birds out, if nothing else. And why was there so much smoke drifting downwind from Orr, more than could be explained by all the city's hearth and heating fires? No matter. No matter at all. He could feel that piece of haunted silver calling him as though he had been born to wield it, and it had been wrought for him and him alone. His destiny lay there, ahead, and all the mousy scrabbling around by those who would deny him would not prevent him taking that power that was rightfully his. He strode forward, walking now, no longer rushed, confident yet still ill at ease with the silence, and a lingering suspicion that all the horizons were masks being worn by his enemies. Chapter 69. Toad Killer Dog was only one of a varied pack of monsters running on the Limper's trail. But he was out in front, their leader, the only one of the crowd not carrying some dread lord or lady out of the tower. He was the scout, the champion, and before this day was through, he hoped to be entered in the annals of history as the destroyer of the last of the 10 who were taken, as the closer of the door on the olden times. He topped a low ridgeline, saw Orr for the first time. He saw, from disturbances in the snow, that the Limper had paused there too. There he was now, a remote speck tramping a lonely track across the pristine snowscape. He dropped down onto his belly to lower his profile, listened to the silence. He watched the smoke drift from the city, noted that everything that had stood outside the walls last time had been cleared away, leaving nothing but a flat white surround. Uneasily for a moment, he surveyed the horizons, feeling almost as if distant groves were the massed helmets and spears of legions waiting in tight array. His companions crowded up behind him. They waited till the speck that was the Limper vanished against the dark loom of the city's walls. Then they all moved forward, marching toward doom or destiny, in a gradually widening line abreast. Chapter 70. Smed sat in the icy shadow, shivering, unable to stop. His stomach felt hollow. It ached. He was scared. He hoped it was the cold and hunger, but was afraid it was the first bite of cholera. The air was filled with smoke and the stench of bodies being burned. Death had reaped a rich harvest during the night. Few who were not soldiers had eaten well in days, Disease made easy headway in bodies already weakened. He watched the bridge up the ditch and wondered if fish would ever come, and what he would do if fish didn't. Then he sat there and gradually convinced himself that he was the last of the four of them, possessed of the greatest treasure in the world, and so poor he was forced to live in a sewer like a rat. He scavenged through his pack for the dozenth time, looking for some scrap of food that might have gotten into it somehow. Again he found nothing but the gold and silver he had brought out of the Barrowland. A fortune, and he would have given it all for a good meal, a warm bed, and confidence that the great terrors of the world had forgotten his name. He started. Daydreaming, he had not noticed the two men come onto the bridge. One looked like fish. He made the signal he was supposed to make before he walked away from the other, who stayed where he was. Smeds shoved his pack into a gap in the culvert wall, where some of the building stone had fallen away, and high water had washed out some of the earth behind. Then he ran toward the light at the nether end, 100 yards away. Midway he stumbled over a corpse that the rats had been at for a while. He had become so inured to horror that he just went on, giving it hardly a thought. He rushed out the other end, floundered through drifted snow, and hurried around to where he was supposed to meet fish, masked from the man on the bridge by a hump of earth 6 feet high. Fish was carrying a sizable blue canvas bag.
"Is it safe?"
Smeds croaked.
"Looks like they'll play square.
This is the first third, along with some food and clothes and blankets and stuff I thought you could use." Smeds' mouth watered, but he asked,
"What now?"
"You go out on the bridge, get the second third, tell him where to find the spike. I watch from cover. He messes with you, I hunt him down and kill him. Go on. Let's get it done."
Smeds looked at the old man a moment, shrugged, went off to meet the man on the bridge. He was calmer than he'd expected to be. Maybe he was getting used to the pressure. He was still pleased with himself for not having bent for a moment while the rebels had him. The man on the bridge leaned on the rail, staring at nothing. He glanced at Smeds incuriously as he approached. Another blue bag leaned against his leg. Smeds sidled up and planted his forearms on the rail on the other side of the bag. The man was younger than Smeds had expected, and of a race he'd never before seen. Easy to see why he had taken the name Exile.
Smeds Stahl.
"Yes.
How come you're playing this square?"
"I've found honesty and fair play productive over the long term. The second third is in the bag. Do you have something for me?"
"In the city wall."
182 paces east of the north gate, below the 26th archer's embrasure, in the mortar behind the block recessed to take the support brace of a timber hoarding.
"Understood. Thank you. Good day."
Smeds hoisted the bag and got the hell out of there.
"Go all right?"
Fish asked.
"Yeah. Now what?"
"Now I'd join up with him to go see if you told the truth. If you did, he gives me the final third. If not, he kills me and comes looking for you."
"Shit. Why not head out now? What we got ought to be enough."
"He's played straight.
I figure it would be smart to play it that way with him. We aren't going to get out of war for a while. Be nice to know there was somebody who wasn't out to get us. You go back where you was hiding. I'll come back to the bridge."
"Right."
Smeds was just about to drop back into the ditch when alarm horns began blowing all over the city. The limper had come. Chapter 71. Raven got him a wild hare. He'd go snag the spike, and that would be a big foot in the door with Darlin. The guy's head was getting a little bent. He didn't tell nobody but Brother Bear Torque, who he conned into going along with him. He started out lucky. They hit no gray patrols. As they got into the heart of the city, here came Exile and an older guy, just like they had timed it for Raven's benefit. They followed the two. Exile and his companion ended up leaning on the rail of a footbridge over a big drainage ditch. Raven and Torque watched from a distance. The area around the ditch was clear. They couldn't get as close as Raven wanted.
"What the hell are they doing?"
Torque asked. "Waiting, looks like." The older man resumed moving, went on, and vanished among tenements beyond the ditch. 5 minutes later, another man came out to the bridge, talked to Exile a little, walked away with a bag.
"That tears it," Torque said. "Time to bend over and kiss our asses goodbye."
"He hasn't got hold of it yet," Raven growled. "We stick and see what turns up." "Look here." The older man was coming out to rejoin Exile. They just stood there.
"Look,"
Raven pointed. The covert from which they watched was about 10 feet higher than the bridge. Just enough of an elevation to reveal the head and shoulders of a man crossing the snow north of the bridge, behind a mound that would mask him from the men on the bridge. He carried 2 blue bags. Alarm horns tore the guts out of the quiet. The men on the bridge took off. Torque said,
"We better get back."
"Wait." There was a nasty gleam in Raven's eyes. "Exile will be busy with the limper. We get that man to tell us where the spike is. Maybe we can get to it first." Chapter 72. Smeds had gotten back to his starting point. He put the 2 bags into hiding with his pack, except for a couple of army blankets, a heavy coat, a knife, food, and a bottle of brandy. He stuffed, warmed his veins, listened to the horns. They were going berserk up there. A noise from down the culvert shocked him. He listened closely, figured it had come from about where the corpse lay, and had been made by something a lot bigger than a rat. He rose carefully, filled his coat pockets with food, laid his blankets in atop the treasure, and froze. A man stood silhouetted in the nearer end of the culvert. One of those rebels. Fish had been right. The bastard just wouldn't let up. The man was coming in. Smeds lifted himself into the hole with his plunder. It was a tight fit and a pathetic attempt at concealment, but he was counting on the man's vision needing a long while to adjust from the brightness outside. Absolutely. The man was still moving tentatively when he came abreast of Smeds. Smeds reached out and cut his throat. The man made an injured rabbit noise and started thrashing around. Smeds climbed down and walked to the mouth of the culvert. He paid no attention to the noise made by someone stumbling toward him from behind. He looked out into the glare, his eyes smarting. He moved out carefully, ready for anything, and found himself alone. The ditch bank was almost vertical there, faced with stone 12 feet high, spotted with ice. A lot of snow had blown into the ditch. Smeds floundered through it. An angry bellow from inside the culvert gave him added incentive to make sure of his hand and toe holds as he climbed. He heard the man come out as he rolled over the lip of the ditch. He got to his feet and waited. An angry face rose above the brink. Smeds kicked as hard as he could, caught the man square in the center of the forehead. He pitched backward. Smeds stepped to the edge, looked down at the figure almost buried in the snow. He caressed the knife in his coat pocket, thought better of going down there because two women and several children had paused near the footbridge, watching. "I hope you freeze to death, you son of a bitch." He kicked loose snow down, turned, and walked away. He felt better than he had in a week, and right then did not much give a damn what the future held. Chapter 73. Darlin was foaming at the mouth when the alarm horns brayed. She had discovered Raven and Bear missing, and was as thoroughly pissed off as I could imagine her getting. Whatever she had in mind, whatever she was making us get dressed up for, she had counted on having more bodies backing her. Right then, she had me and Silent and Bowman's and Stubby Torque. Paddlefoot Torque had died a half hour earlier. She stomped her feet and sighed. "I do not need him. I survived without him before. Get moving. Get those horses ready." She pulled a knee-length shirt of mail over her head, followed that with a white tabard. As she buckled on a very unfeminine sword, she snarled and grimaced so nobody argued. Bowman's helped us both mount up. Stubby Torque handed her a lance he'd jury-rigged from junk from around the stable. She had her banner tied to it, furled. If her wound bothered her, she didn't show it. Silent finally got his balance enough to try arguing with the whirlwind. The whirlwind almost rode him down, and there was nothing for him to do but jump onto his own animal and try to keep up. Darlin paused once in the street outside. She looked at the sky, seemed pleased with what she saw. When I looked up, all I saw was a gliding hawk, very high, or an eagle, higher still. She took off. She hadn't bothered to tell any of us what she was going to do, probably because she figured we would have tied her up to stop her. She was right. We kept busy now, keeping up and sorting ourselves out so the two wizards were closest to her, able to guard her with their skills. She headed in the direction the alarm said the threat lay. The mad woman. The Imperials had several minutes jump on us, but we made most of that up. As we moved into that part of the city near the southeast wall, we overtook hundreds of hurrying soldiers. Silent, or Bowman's, conjured an ugly sound and set it running ahead of us to scare everybody out of our way. We burst out into the cleared space behind the wall. Darling headed straight for a long ramp that had been put up so heavy engines could be dragged to the ramparts. She headed up it, making soldiers jump to get out of her way. I told myself it had been an exciting past year, and now it was time to die. Soldiers scampered away as we hit the rampart. I glimpsed Limper walking toward Orr, all by his lonesome. Darlin made her mount rear and scream. She unfurled her vermilion banner with the white rose embroidered in silk. Utter silence. The Imperials gawked, petrified. Even the Limper stopped his implacable advance and stared. Then, the shriek of the eagle, it was an eagle, ripped the air. The raptor came screaming down. Before it lighted on Darlin's shoulder, with what had to be bone-rattling impact, she pointed out at the land beyond the walls. All heads turned. 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, the wind wails rose into the sky. Squadrons, troops, battalions of centaurs came cantering out of hiding. The drum of their hooves a continuous thunder, despite the muting effect of the snow. Whole sections of wood started moving toward the city. Mantas began to slip off the backs of the wind wails, scouting for updrafts. More glided over the city from behind us, just to let the world know the place was surrounded. Darling rose in her stirrups and surveyed her surroundings, searching for someone who did not agree that this was the day of the White Rose. The snowfields erupted and talking stones began appearing, assuming posts along predetermined lines, forming the skeleton of a wall that would close the limper in. Damn me. The tree god must have started on the build-up, clear back when we first hit ore. Darling settled into her saddle. She was pleased with herself. Everybody watched her for a cue, even the limper. Bowman's faced north, a resolute sentinel, never letting events behind him distract him from his watch for trouble. Silent remained as fixed on the wall to the south, while Torque and I tried to keep a lookout everywhere at once. Bowman said, "Case, tell her exile is coming." I backed my horse till Darling could see my hands without having to surrender her attention for the limper and her continuing dispositions. She nodded. I told her I had spotted gossamer and spider silk sneaking around north and south of us, respectively. She nodded again, unperturbed. Exile approached us at a normal walk, careful not to give offense before he understood the full scope of his predicament. I was surprised that he looked so young, despite the fact that I had seen the lady, who was at least 400, and looked a well-preserved 20. I noticed the old guy who stuck me in Darling, drifting along in Exile's shadow. Exile came up and looked the situation over. He showed no special response except to look at gossamer and spider silk as if warning them to behave themselves. He came to us.
"Most impressive."
He did not look impressed.
"You quite took me by surprise. I am Exile. Who are you? And who speaks for you?"
"Just a stranger," chance met, making casual introductions. Bowman's and Silent were busy. Torque still didn't have the lingo so good. That left old Case. I was elected.
"I'll do the talking,"
I indicated Darling. "The White Rose."
"So I see."
I didn't figure on naming anybody else, but Bowman's decided I should. He said,
"Bowman's. The Wakener."
Exile showed a little surprise at that. Bowman's had a reputation. He was also supposed to be dead. I indicated Silent. "Silent, formerly of the Black Company. I'm Philodendron." I didn't name Torque. Seemed a good idea to leave something to nag on Exile's imagination.
"I suppose you're here for the same reason everyone else is."
He kept one eye on the limper, I noticed. Right then, the limper was eyeballing the situation and counting up his options. I signed at Darlin. She signed back. I told Exile. "The silver spike. The tree god will not allow it to fall into the hands of anyone who wants its power. Whatever the cost."
"So I see," said Exile.
It did look like the plane had belched up all of every one of its weirdnesses. I wondered who was at home keeping the shop spooky.
"That thing out there might have something to say about that to all of us."
Darling signed some more. I said, "We will destroy it if you can't. The tree has concluded that it has tormented itself and the world long enough. It will be destroyed." Exile started to say something, but never got the chance. I reckon Limper heard us well enough to get pissed because everybody wanted to put him into the past tense. He had something all ready to go. But as he was about to cut loose, spider silk beat him to the punch. hit him from the side, and knocked him ass over appetite. His spell went screaming straight up, making a sound like the biggest bull roar in the universe. Gossamer hit him from the other side. A missile storm pounded away at him. Glowing red balls arced in from the fields to the south, and for the first time, I noticed a group of black riders down there, all mounted on the nastiest-looking critters I've ever seen. I thought I recognized our old buddy Toadkiller Dog. When the red balls came down, they hit the ground like a giant stomping, leaving steaming black holes pounded into the snow and the earth beneath. Exalt just stood there with his hands in his pockets, watching. None of my bunch did anything either. The Night Stalkers came marching into the cleared area behind the wall, all spit and polish, neatly in step, their band playing. They began taking over positions as though this was nothing more than a changing of the guard. Brigadier Wildbrand, all squeaky clean, came marching up to report to Exalt. The uproar died down. Nobody had done much damage to the Limper. He hadn't done any either. Wildbrand glanced at us. I winked. That startled her. So I tried another trick, pixie that I am. What you doing after work, sweetie? She snubbed me. Not good enough for her, I guess. Just as well. She was too old for me. A shadow fell on us all as she and Exile talked tactics. A granddaddy wind whale had moved into position overhead, not all that high up. I was impressed. Exile and Wildbrand checked it out. He seemed the more perturbed. They went back to tactics. I glanced at the world outside. Limper was getting set to try something. The black riders had dismounted. Their steeds had disappeared. Toadkiller Dog was among the missing, too. The riders were walking closer. I noticed that talking stones, walking trees, and centaurs had gotten in behind them. Limper charged the wall, a dark cloud forming around him. Everything cut loose again and didn't bother him at all. He jumped up and kicked the wall and knocked a hole in it 50 feet wide. Exile joined the party, somehow pouring on an endless torrential shower of fire. Limper hadn't much liked fire last time we saw him. He didn't mind it now, except he had trouble seeing straight. He wanted to knock down the wall where we were. He hit it two more times, once to either side of us, then backed off to think about what to do next. Exile gave up with the flames. They hadn't done much. The Night Stalkers were busy repairing the gaps already. I knew what I'd do next if I was the Limper. I'd prance through one of those breaches and start taking out my top enemies. Being almost as smart as me, he figured it that way himself. The snow was pretty torn up out there now, but he strayed onto some virgin stuff while he was making up his mind which breach to charge. About 50 slimy green tentacles shot up out of it, glommed onto him, and started trying to pull him apart. The snow all around erupted. A whole pride of monsters piled on Limper. Toadkiller Dog got his head in his jaws and tried to bite it off. Something else shoved a hoof in his mouth so he couldn't do no hollering. The people who had ridden those monsters ran toward the excitement. Exile and the twins paid no attention. They faced the city now, making concerted, complex, come-hither gestures. What looked like a flock of birds rose from deep in the city and headed our way. Close up, I saw it wasn't birds at all, but lots of chunks of wood. The flock settled outside the wall, neatly building a monumental pyre. Did they think they were going to roast Limper? They'd tried fire already. No. A giant pot followed the wood, sloshing, settled amidst the pyre. A big lid followed. It just hung around in the air, waiting. The Black Riders got in on the fun down below. Everybody and everything was trying to cut the limper up or tear him apart. I asked Torque, "You got an onion we can toss in?" Brigadier Wildbrand said, "That's the spirit." She winked when I looked at her. The spirit? I didn't have no spirit left. This wasn't even my fight when I thought about it. And my hip was hurting so bad, I expected to fall off everything in a minute. The limper bit the hoof off the thing that had one in his mouth, spit it out, let out a howl like the world's death scream. Bodies and pieces of body flew. Only Toad Killer Dog hung on. He and the limper rolled around, growling and screaming while the others tried to get back into it. Exile assessed the damage. He looked at me. "He's too strong for us. It wasn't a great hope anyway. Will you contribute?" I signed to Darling. "He wants help." She nodded, fixed on the action. For a moment I thought she wasn't going to answer. Then she made a complicated series of hand gestures. The eagle plunged off her shoulder, went flapping off and up. I saw what Exile meant about Limper being too strong. One of the monsters was doing the foot-and-mouth trick to keep his sorcery silent. Toad Killer Dog was on his back, hanging on with all four limbs, his jaws still locked on the Limper's head, which he had almost completely turned around. But the others could not keep his limbs pinned. He used those to devastating effect. The shadow of the wind whale grew more and more deep. It was coming down. Already I could smell it. It dropped tentacles into the fray, grabbed Limper without any care to avoid getting anyone or anything else. Toad Killer Dog was in that mess. A couple other monsters and a couple of human beings too squished to scream. A wind whale has the strength to snap 500-year-old royal oaks. The limper did not. The wind whale tore the whole mess into bitty pieces and dumped it into the giant pot. Something to be said for brute strength sometimes. The pot lid slammed down. Clasps clanked. The pyre roared to life. I wondered how the limper would get out of this one. He'd survived the worst so many times before. I looked at Exile. "What about the silver spike?" He was not happy. "You couldn't take the limper. You can't take us." He checked the wind whales, the talking stones, the walking trees, the centaurs and mantas, said, "You have a point. On the other hand, why surrender a tool you can use to knock the Empire down? I have good soldiers here. The chances of battle look no worse than those of not fighting." I couldn't answer that. I took it to Darling. Everyone in sight was watching, waiting for a clue to their next move. Tension was not down a bit because the limper was out of the game. I signed. Darlin had me hold the standard so she would have both hands free to answer. I felt funny doing that, like I was making a commitment to a cause I still did not truly support. She signed at me for a long time. I told Exile, "The spike will not be used at all. By anyone, whatever the cost. A place has been prepared by the tree god in the abyss between universes, where only a power greater and more evil can retrieve it." Which meant, I guess, that anybody bad enough to get the damned thing back would be bad enough not to need it in the first place.
Exile looked around, shrugged, said, "That's good enough for me. We planned to isolate it too, but our method would have been less certain." A flash and crash trampled his last word. Bowman's had stirred himself. Up the way, Gossamer took a couple drunken steps and walked right off the rampart. The old wizard said, "She disagreed with the decision." Exile stared at Spider Silk, frozen in mid-motion. She relaxed slowly, lowered her gaze. After a minute, went to check on her sister. I checked Bowman's. The old boy looked real pleased with himself. Speaking of old men, where the hell was that guy who'd been following Exile around? Gone? And I never noticed him go. That old bastard was half spook. Chapter 74. Raven came to, slowly, shaky and disoriented. Memory of a flashing boot and savage impact. Realization that he had a ferocious headache. That his hip had begun to ache. That he was so cold, he had begun to feel warm in his extremities. A moment of panic. He tried to thrash around, found his limbs only vaguely cooperative. Worse panic before the onset of reason. He wriggled his way out of the snow, got to his feet carefully. He felt himself over, scraped frozen blood off his face. The bastard had got him good. Almost had to admire those guys, the way they were hanging in there against the whole world. Painfully, he dragged himself out of the ditch, stood on wobbly legs looking around, the old hip wound gnawing. Things had changed. There were monsters in the sky and witch fires flaring in the distance. The limper had come. Darling would be in the middle of it. And he wasn't there. She would think he had run out again. Raven reached the center of excitement in time to witness Gossamer's fall. Everyone seemed to relax after the incident. The limper must not be a threat right now. The crowd came down off the wall. Soldiers brought horses for Exile and Brigadier Wildbrand. A platoon of Night Stalkers fell in around them, and they started moving north. Raven wondered what the hell was happening. It looked like Darling and Exile had cut a deal. He could not catch them now, wobbly as he was. The twins had their heads together. They threw dark looks after the departing company. They radiated a stench of wickedness about to break loose. Better stick with them. Chapter 75. When the monsters began sliding across the sky, Smed suffered an attack of caution. Able to think of nowhere else to run, he headed back to the ditch. The guy he had kicked was still there, twitching once in a while. He backed off and watched, waiting to see what the guy would do. After a while, the guy woke up, dragged himself out, and tottered off. Good. Now he had a place to wait for fish. He went over and around and entered the culvert from the northern end, passed through, and sat down to wait. Fish showed up a forever later, standing over there on the footbridge. He didn't have the other blue bag. Damn. Smeds whistled just loud enough to carry the fish, waved cautiously. "What happened?" he asked when fish arrived. "Where's the other bag?" Fish explained. Smeds told his story. Fish said, "We need to get out of here then. Let's get the stuff. We might be able to get out one of the breaches if there's any more excitement. With the spike up for grabs, we can count on that." They got the blue bags, which they rubbed up with dirt, and Smedz's pack, and headed for the area where the wall had been breached. The city was a place of ghosts. The living cowered behind locked doors and barred windows, praying their gods would keep them safe from the terrors without and the cholera within. The occasional cry of a cholera victim made Smedz think more of haunts bedamned than of the living in pain. Chapter 76. Exile wouldn't say where the spike was hid. He didn't act like he wanted to pull something, just like he wanted to be in on the whole thing. Like he wanted to look at the cause for all the fuss. Can't say I blame him. I saw it back when it was just a big nail. I wanted to see how it had changed. He led us up toward Orr's North Gate, got up on the wall, and started marching back and forth. We stuck tight. Outside, the friendly troops had begun a shift to the north. Exile took inspiration, told Brigadier Wildbrand to seal off the area inside the wall. We'd had enough trouble over the hunk of metal already. He asked for masons and heavy lifting equipment to be brought too. The damned spike was in the wall. No wonder nobody ever found it. Wildbrand sent messages. Night Stalkers moved in. I was concerned. I would have been more concerned if the sky wasn't filled with monsters. It took 2 hours to assemble machinery and workmen, and another for them to get set up to start pulling the wall apart. Nobody could stay tense all that time. Sometime during the wait, Bowmans asked Exile, "What arrangements did you make to keep your fire fueled?" "Rendering the limper was a good idea, but you'll have to pressure cook him for days. The fire seems to be failing." Exile looked down south. Bowmans was right. Exile frowned, muttered, grumbled at Brigadier Wildbrand. Next time I looked, some of my scabrous-old buddies from the militia were running firewood to the pot, and not doing a very good job. Once everything was set and the spike's hiding place was sealed off inside the city and out, Exile asked Darlin if she was ready to see it brought to light. She told him to get on with it. There was a new kind of tension around. Like everyone's temper was short, and we were all waiting for somebody to do something inexcusable so we could let off steam by kicking his butt. Guys started banging away with sledges and wedges and pry bars, and 10 minutes later, the first stone rose out of its setting. The day got on into late afternoon before the workmen exposed the layer of mortar supposed to contain the spike. For a moment, everyone forgot enmities and allegiances and crowded up to stare at the blackened half of the spike that lay exposed. Darling told Silent to go get it. He borrowed a mason's hammer, put on heavy leather gloves, took along a lined leather sack and somebody's old shirt to wrap and pack it in. He wasn't going to take any chances with the damned thing. Darling readied a small wooden chest. About the time Silent chopped the spike loose, I glanced toward that giant pot. So I missed the beginning of the excitement around me,